This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Sharit Abdullah and Wong Xiaoning. It is 7:06 in the morning, Monday the 15th of July. And in the US, equities pushed further on Friday. The Dow Jones was up 0.9%, staying at over 27,000 to close at 27,332 points. The S&P 500 was up 0.5%, also staying over the 3,000-point mark, and the NASDAQ was 0.6% higher.
However, in Asia, all greens, and top performer being Shanghai Composite being a 0.44% gain. And of course, FBM KLCI is the only underperforming bursa here, with going down by 0.6%.
Yeah, we are the odd market that has stuck out. And even on a year-to-date basis, we remain the only market that's actually loss-making on a year-to-date basis.
Right.
Hang Seng was up 0.14%, Kospi was up 0.3%, and Singapore Straits Times also closed up 0.2%.
So for more insight into global markets, we have on the line with us today Stephen Innes, Managing Partner of Vanguard Markets. Thank you for joining us, Stephen. Now, there are potentially more cues from the US Fed and policymakers this week, with various reps scheduled to speak. Are you expecting them to reaffirm the Fed futures, which are pointing towards a 70 basis point easing for 2019?
Yeah, I think that seems to be the case. We're looking at most of the Fed narrative appearing to be quite dismissive of some slightly better data that came out of the U.S. I think we started back with the non-farm payrolls, but was followed up by better-than-expected consumer price index. And even Friday's producer price index was a little bit higher than the market had expected. But yes, they seem to be sidestepping this. We've got a lot of Fed speak on the plate this week. One of the key ones will be the New York Fed Chair Williams, that will be speaking twice this week. He's more of a centrist, but has been leading a little bit hawkish, so we're going to be keeping close attention to him. Interestingly enough, Fed Evans, Chicago Fed, came out on Friday calling for a 50 basis point cut. So it seems that the dubs are really pressing the buttons here to push for a more aggressive rate cut than what the market currently prices in. We're around 29 basis points priced in for July, slightly above the 25 basis point call that seems to be dominating the markets. So we'll see what happens between now and then. If data pulls back, it could suggest that we could move the Dow towards a 50 basis point cut.
And Stephen, what are your expectations for U.S. retail data? How significant will this be to the Fed's decision-making?
You know, it's interesting, again, because they've been so dismissive of the non-farm payroll. And let's put that in perspective. That was a very strong number. That suggested after the data hit, markets really pulled back from even 25 basis points. I think it was wrong, primarily because we're viewing a Fed regime shift right now that's moving away from what we refer to as more of a Taylor rule that encompasses a lot of domestic data points, to more of a risk management policy, which is also addressing a trade war and the negative effects that it's having on global economy. For instance, one of the key indicators we look at is the Global Purchasing Managers Index, and that has a massive influence on U.S. interest rates, especially around the two-year level. It's almost, if you look at the long-term chart, it's almost identical. So the weakening purchasing managers data globally, the decline in these purchases, is right on 2%, and that's exactly where the two-year yield in the U.S. is. So there is a cause here. There is some concern that the Feds are correctly addressing the negative impacts of the global economy that might start to press into the U.S. economy. So this is, in my view, a prudent move, not a negative move.
Stephen, and looking at U.S. markets, right, they're hitting all-time highs, but at the same time, gold is also holding up its case. This defies the historical inverse price relationship. Why is this the case now?
Markets are completely different from what they were before. It's amazing. It's one of the probably strongest bullish indications you can probably get for gold markets. Here's a couple of things, right? The world's no less safer place right now, with a lot of tension in the Middle East. We still really don't know what's happening on trade war. I mean, that could escalate, and it could continue to weigh negatively on the U.S. the global economy. So I think given those uncertainties, gold does look attractive, especially when you frame it with central banks that are dropping interest rates. And also, if you consider the actual weight of negative yielding bonds in the market, gold actually provides a suitable hedge as opposed to investors who don't really like negative yielding bonds. So I think this is what's adding to its appeal. I think something's going to give. You know, and that's the big question here. Will the equity markets continue to move higher? Well, ultimately, we've seen that strong correlation between easy money and higher equity markets is looking very convincing. So, yes. But at the same time, global uncertainties also support gold. So, yeah, we're sort of getting the best of both worlds right now. And I think gold is going to continue to shine, however, given all those uncertainties.
And Stephen, China's Q2 GDP numbers come out today, and the consensus expects growth to slow to 6.2%. What in particular will you be paying attention to here?
Well, the headline is going to be a real driver for the markets. I think any downside miss is going to crystallize the market view that even beyond trade war, China's economy hasn't bottomed out. Two things we'll take from here. One, because of the U.S. risk management approach dealing with global issues, I think this even solidifies a more dovish Fed outlook. But also, what we have to look at here is this could trigger a more aggressive response from the PBOC, which in my view will be very, very supportive to commodity prices, very supportive to oil markets, and actually quite supportive to regional equity markets. So I think this could be one of the issues holding the markets back. Is sure, we've had some indication of fiscal pumps by China mainland regulators, but really an overt easing would really kick risk assets into high gear. And this is something investors are keeping an eye on.
Thank you so much, Stephen. And that was Stephen Innes, a managing partner of Vanguard Markets, weighing in on China's Q2 GDP as well as some of the cues from the US Fed and policymakers this week. And I guess all this observation of around central banks has really started to crystallize into the question of how much do these central banks really have left in their arsenal? Because it looks like central bankers around the world, they're ready to act in the face of a potential another economic downturn. Because Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell, as well as the ECB President Mario Draghi, they stand ready alongside many of their counterparts to cut interest rates in order to bolster some of the weakest growth seen in a decade. But is that going to be enough in the long run?
Yeah, so central bank, they have very little to work with, and perhaps more worryingly is that their action seems to lack potency in expansion, and price growth are flagging despite the easy money already in the system, and further stimulus may do little to offset the trade war.
Yeah, especially with the structural obstacles such as rising debt burden and digital disruption, and also aging populations in the picture.
So in some international headlines as well this morning, for months, executives from Anheuser-Busch InBev, or AB InBev, they've raced to prepare for a listing of their Asian subsidiary Budweiser, and it was to be this year's biggest IPO, expected to surpass Uber's $8.1 billion share sale. And the hope was that the Belgian company's leading position in the premium beer market in China would justify the target to raise as much as $9.8 billion. So if that's for a valuation of $64 billion. But on Friday, AB Anheuser-Busch discovered it wasn't enough to convince investors.
And so they've decided to dial back their ambition to put the giant IPO plan on hold. So AB InBev's setback can be explained, at least partly by shifting trends in China, where younger consumers are increasingly moving away from traditional beers towards higher price craft brews and cocktails. And meanwhile, competition in China is spiking after rival Heineken forged a blockbuster deal with a state-owned company. And all that apparently left a lot of investors wary of buying into Budweiser's richly valued IPO.
Yeah, this view was echoed by Jefferies international analyst Ed Mundy, who told Bloomberg's News last week. We do feel that there are better places to be invested within beer, such as Carlsberg or Heineken. Now, Jefferies, a broking house, has estimated a valuation of close to $45 billion US versus the $64 billion that was targeted by the In its statement, AB InBev said it wasn't proceeding with the transaction, partly due to prevailing market conditions. Now, sources told Bloomberg that the company may explore options such as selling a minority stake in its Asian business, although there were no immediate plans for the deal. Now, from what I read from different market sources, actually, the book was already covered on Friday evening, but that was at the lower end of the the range. Now, what had happened, according to Bloomberg, was initially in the beginning of the week when the book seemed to be covered, investment bankers actually enlarged the size of the deal from the original $5 to $6 billion to as much as $8 to $10 billion. And suddenly they saw a softening of demand. Mm. And of course, that's also a function of how markets were behaving that particular week. And yes, equity markets are all-time global high. But, you know, you might think, hey, do I want to put so much money into this brewery company, which is also facing some headwinds in China?
Yeah, particularly competition. Now, you mentioned a Heineken deal in China, Sharitz, and that was a $3.1 billion investment in the parent of China Resources Beer Holdings Co., which is China's top brewer. And Heineken's also licensing its brand to the state-backed company on a long-term basis. Added to that, Carlsberg has moved into 32 cities over the years and plans to add five more during 2019. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.